31. It took them most of the morning to clear the zone of destruction with which the Great Bear had protected itself. But the going was a little easier along the path of the beam, and once they had put the deadfalls and tangles of underbrush behind them, deep forest took over again, and they were able to move at better speed. The brook which had emerged from the rock wall in the clearing ran busily along to their right. It had been joined by several smaller streamlets, and its sound was deeper now. There were more animals here. They heard them moving through the woods, going about their daily round, and twice they saw small groups of deer. One of them, a buck with a noble rack of antlers on its upraised and questioning head, looked to be at least 300 pounds. The brook bent away from their path as they began to climb again, and as the afternoon began to slant down toward evening, Eddie saw something.
"Could we stop here? Rest a minute?"
"What is it?" Susanna asked. "Yes," Roland said, "we can stop." Suddenly Eddie felt Henry's presence again, like a weight settling on his shoulders. "Oh, look at the sissy. Does the sissy see something in it, twee? Does the sissy want to carve something, does he? Oh, ain't that cute?"
"We don't have to stop. I mean, no big deal. I just
saw something," Roland finished for him. "Whatever it is, stop running your everlasting mouth and get it."
"It's really nothing."
Eddie felt warm blood mount into his face. He tried to look away from the ash tree which had caught his eye. "But it is. It's something you need, and that's a long way from nothing. If you need it, Eddie, we need it. What we don't need is a man who can't let go of the useless baggage of his memories." The warm blood turned hot. Eddie stood with his flaming face pointed at his moccasins for a moment longer, feeling as if Roland had looked directly into his confused heart with his faded blue bombardier's eyes. "Eddie?" Susanna asked curiously. "What is it, dear?" Her voice gave him the courage he needed. He walked to the slim, straight ash, pulling Roland's knife from his belt.
"Maybe nothing," he muttered, and then forced himself to add, "Maybe a lot. If I don't fuck it up, maybe quite a lot."
"The ash is a noble tree and full of power," Roland remarked from behind him, but Eddie barely heard. Henry's sneering, hectoring voice was gone. His shame was gone with it. He thought only of the one branch that had caught his eye. It thickened and bulged slightly as it ran into the trunk. It was this oddly shaped thickness that Eddie wanted. He thought the shape of the key was buried within it, the key he had seen briefly in the fire before the burning remains of the jawbone had changed again and the rose had appeared. Three inverted V's, the center V both deeper and wider than the other two, and the little S shape at the end, that was the secret. A breath of his dream recurred. "Dada-chum, dada-chi, not to worry, you've got the key." "Maybe," he thought, "but this time I'll have to get all of it. I think that this time 90% just won't do." Working with great care, he cut the branch from the tree and then trimmed the narrow end. He was left with a fat chunk of ash about 9 inches long. It felt heavy and vital in his hand, very much alive and willing enough to give up its secret shape. To a man skillful enough to tease it out, that was. Was he that man? And did it matter? Eddie Dean thought the answer to both questions was yes. The gunslinger's good left hand closed over Eddie's right hand. "I think you know a secret."
"Maybe I do."
"Can you tell?" He shook his head.
"Better not to, I think. Not yet."
Roland thought this over, then nodded. "All right. I want to ask you one question, and then we'll drop the subject. Have you perhaps seen some way into the heart of my problem?" Eddie thought, and that's as close as he'll ever come to showing the desperation that's eating him alive.
"I don't know. Right now I can't tell for sure, but I hope so, man. I really, really do."
Roland nodded again and released Eddie's hand. "I thank you. We still have 2 hours of good daylight. Why don't we make use of them?"
"Fine by me." They moved on. Roland pushed Susanna, and Eddie walked ahead of them, holding the chunk of wood with the key buried in it. It seemed to throb with its own warmth, secret and powerful. 32. That night, after supper was eaten, Eddie took the gunslinger's knife from his belt and began to carve. The knife was amazingly sharp and seemed never to lose its edge. Eddie worked slowly and carefully in the firelight, turning the chunk of ash this way and that in his hands, watching the curls of fine-grained wood rise ahead of his long, sure strokes. Susanna lay down, laced her hands behind her head, and looked up at the stars wheeling slowly across the black sky. At the edge of the campsite, Roland stood beyond the glow of the fire and listened as the voices of madness rose once more in his aching, confused mind. There was a boy. There was no boy. Was. Wasn't. Was. He closed his eyes, cupped his aching forehead in one cold hand, and wondered how long it would be until he simply snapped like an overwound bowstring. "Oh, Jake," he thought, "where are you? Where are you?" And above the three of them, Old Star and Old Mother rose into their appointed places and stared at each other across the starry ruins of their ancient, broken marriage.